We're about to bring up Dr. Doug Rocky, a man of incredible courage, sent in by the Pentagon, basically, I guess, to whitewash things. He wouldn't do it. He got sick himself. He has an incredible resume and background. And there's a lot of other top scientists now researching and looking at this. The evidence is conclusive. It's finally broken in the New York Daily News and then picked up by a lot of British papers. But still, neocon liars get on the radio and say it's some type of liberal lie, when in truth, they are the socialist pimps, the fascist control freaks, whatever you want to call them. Doctor, good to have you on. Just tell us a little bit about yourself. In a nutshell, encapsulate what's happened and give us the latest developments.
Well, from the very beginning, I was been in the military since 1967. They finally put me on the retirement list in September of 2003, so that's just a few years. Served in Vietnam, went back to Desert Storm, National Guard, Army Reserve, combat medic, medical team leader, health physicist, medical planner, operations, weapons of mass destruction, intel officer, kind of like everything over the last 36 years. During Gulf War I, I was a member of the famed Bowers Raiders. We were the theater, nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare special operations team. And then with the completion of the ground war and the use of uranium munitions, General Schwarzkopf's chief of staff reassigned me by director from the Pentagon to clean up the depleted uranium mess. In 94 and 95, after we had started the United States Army Environmental Policy Institute report, and I'd written numerous reports, I was recalled to active duty as the U.S. Army and ended up being NATO project, depleted uranium project director, to develop all the environmental remediation procedures, the education and training, and the emergency response procedures for the use of uranium munitions by the U.S. and NATO forces.
What did you find in your in-depth investigations?
Well, firsthand experience during Gulf War I is that all of us, even though myself and my team were wearing respiratory and skin protection, we came down with the respiratory and rash problems within 24 to 48 hours, and we have had them ever since. We found that the uranium contamination was so extensive that you absolutely must, and this is absolutely adopted by the United States Department of Defense and NATO, that you must wear full respiratory and skin protection within 50 meters of any destroyed building, vehicle, equipment, anything that you have that's been shot up.
By the way, we have the Army training video posted for free. You can go watch it. A long clip of it. It's, as Joyce said, 8 hours long, but we have a large clip of it, where they admit everything you're saying, and they had this from 93 studies, and then they put this out in 95, but they won't show it to the troops.
That is correct, because although I had the responsibility and I did all the research, firsthand research, not only in Gulf War I, but I went to the Nevada test site, Mercury, Nevada, U.S. Department of Energy. I burned up vehicles loaded with uranium munitions. I shot up all kinds of Soviet equipment and uranium munitions, measured the contamination, determined how and if we could clean it up, which virtually you can't do, and we put it all together. And as a consequence of all my work, it came out very, very clear. Number one, all uranium, depleted uranium or radioactive materials contamination must be cleaned up, and that is required by United States Army Regulation 700-48.
And this is all before Gulf War II, when they used massive more amounts than what they used in the first Gulf War.
Absolutely. It's management equipment contaminated, depleted uranium and radioactive commodities. This regulation is signed by General Eric Shinseki himself. Okay, cut and dry. They acknowledge the health and environmental effects. They direct that all of it be isolated, secured, properly disposed of. But what has happened all over, whether it be in Vieques, Puerto Rico, Concord, Massachusetts, Jefferson Primogon, Indiana, Aberdeen, Maryland, throughout Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Afghanistan, Okinawa, all the contamination is left there.
Serbia, too.
Serbia and Balkans, in 93 and 94, I wrote up the management cleanup plans for 94 and 95 use, and then they went back in 1999. Even though several of us had been called up to the White House with a presidential oversight board under Senator Warren Rudman and Admiral Elmo Zumwalt, who's now deceased, and we warned them, said, you can't do it.
Now, doctor, I mean, you were the head of the program. You wrote the studies. You were there with the other scientists, the other doctors. For those that just joined us, explain to them what depleted uranium is. That might be a good thing to talk about.
Depleted uranium is the byproduct of the uranium enrichment process by which we remove the fissionable components, that's uranium-234 and 235, that are used to make nuclear weapons and nuclear reactor fuel. for every 100 pounds of the radioactive isotope complex, uranium-238, 234, and 235, that goes into the enrichment process at Paducah, Kentucky, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and Portsmouth, Ohio, you can remove 0.6 pounds that's usable for nuclear weapons or reactor fuel construction. As a consequence of every 100 pounds of solid you go in there, you have 99.4 pounds that is radioactive waste that is processed and made into depleted uranium for use in munitions, for use in counterweights and ballast in all of our commercial aircraft. It's actually being used to put into concrete that is sold to the general public under what's called DU-crete. In other words, the U.S. Department of Energy has over 1 million metric tons of the stuff they want to get away.
So what they do is when they have a toxic waste, whether it be sodium fluoride or depleted uranium, they just put it out there as a precious commodity.
Absolutely. And then, and because it's such an extremely effective combat tool, because what it's formed into is solid uranium rods. They're giant darts. The Abrams tank fires a uranium dart that each and every dart is solid uranium, and each and every dart is over 10 pounds per dart.
Unbelievable.
And then the A-10 Warthog aircraft, which is just, you know, blew up the neighborhoods in Baghdad.
They use the Vulcan cannon on that.
Yeah, that fires a uranium rod. Each individual rod is 3/4 of a pound of solid uranium with a slight copper shielding, and it fires at a rate of 4,000 rounds per minute on target. That's 1.5 tons of solid uranium on target per minute.
And in the first Gulf War, they just used it in certain areas. Now they use it all over these populated areas. What's the half-life? How long are these areas going to be contaminated?
Well, the areas are going to be contaminated for eternity. Unless you physically remove all of the contamination, which is required by Army Regulation 700-48 and the Technical Bulletin 9-1300-278, unless you physically isolate, secure, remove, and dispose of this in a massive deep hole that can't get to water contamination, can't get to anything, it will affect everybody forever.
And then where do you put the blasted-out tanks and structures? I mean, this stuff turns to aerosolized powder, does it not, Doctor, on impact, so it's impossible.
That is correct. And what happened during Gulf War One, we had 16 Abrams tanks and 15 Bradley fighting vehicles that were all destroyed with friendly fire or maintenance. You know, something went wrong with not six of the tanks, you know, where they blew up and burned on their own. You know, one day you had a bad day. It took my team 3 months to process 24 vehicles for shipment back to the United States. And we buried a whole lot in the desert in Saudi Arabia with the body parts that I couldn't get out. And then once they were sent back, the 24 vehicles were sent back to the United States Department of Energy, Savannah River Sites, Defense Consolidation Facility, it took them 3 years in a multi-million dollar facility, the only facility of its kind in the world, to process those 24 vehicles for disposal.
So what are the health effects? And then I want to get into these new scientists. The New York Daily News hired, you know, top scientists to look at this and said, oh, yeah, these troops are contaminated with it. What are the health effects of it from your studies? And then I want to get into the latest developments and then the cover-up, because that's – and Joyce, of course, can speak on that. Jump in any time, Joyce. But, Doctor, please continue.
Okay, what happened is the health effects, the first health effects that we saw, and, again, this is documented going back to October of 1943 during the Manhattan Project. I talked to the Manhattan Project scientists that verified this was known then. You know, they're like 90 years old today. Okay, and Joyce, you've had some of their mentors on your show already, Dr. Loren Murray.
Yes, we have.
And what has happened is the first thing we saw on ourselves, and which was reported throughout Gulf War I and Gulf War II, was the respiratory. It acts like a bronchitis. You have it all the respiratory problems. The next thing that showed up is a rash. That has showed up in Gulf War I, it's in Gulf War II, and on these kids that you've mentioned right now, and all the civilians. Then over a period of time, you have the radiation causing damage, what's called calcified granulomas. They actually damage the lung tissue. We have absolutely confirmed chromosomal damage. That is, the DNA and the chromosomes are damaged by the radiation, ionizing radiation that affects the cells. And you have all of the health effects that go on down. Then you have cataracts with the radiation. You have all the kidney problems that documented in us that have, again, the new guys now have already documented happening to them. And then you have all the birth defects, and you have the cancers. The first cancer on one of my team members started in the nasal and pharyngeal passageway within 9 months. The first lung cancers and deaths were within 2 years, and they continue.
Unbelievable. And the government knows about this. Joyce, you've had guests on who've been there at the hearings, and the generals just tell the troops, we don't care what the truth is. We follow orders, and yeah, we know what's going on. So what? Joyce, how do these... What's wrong with the globalists? Why did they almost enjoy this? It's like Bill Clinton with the tainted HIV blood knowingly shipping it around the world. I mean, why do they do this?
Well, I think you've got a means to an end here. And like Doug has said many times, you know, they want to kill things, kill people and break things. And the best way to do it is with depleted uranium. So until they have something better, they don't care what the effects of it are going to be. Now, I do want to say that Europe is concerned about this right now. We have a major interest from Italy, from Australia, from France, from Greece. And I know Dr. Rocky has just been in Australia and really set fire under the people there.
We're going to talk about that. I mean, and here's another question for both of you. How do we attack Iraq for weapons of mass destruction while our government is bombarding all, you know, these countries with this stuff and using it in our own country?
Well, first off, let's make it loud and clear. Prior to Gulf War I, Iraq did possess chemical and biological munitions and anthrax. That was provided to them by the United States Army, the United States of America. That is confirmed in the Regal Commission report prepared by James Toot for Senator Regal. And that was subject of a made-for-TV movie we called Did Thanks for a Grateful Nation, starring Ted Danson and Mark Helgenberger. So there's no doubt that that happened. What happened is we made a conscious decision to blow this stuff up in place in December of 1990. That's in Schwarzkopf's autobiography, It Doesn't Take a Hero, page 390. And so we have all this stuff happening.
Tell you what, stay there, Dr. Rocky and Joyce Riley. I'm Alex Jones. We'll be back. Just a lot more coming up. This is so important. Stay with us.